The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So my focus in my book is a little bit different than all the books that I'd read, because my message is really targeted more towards business, to say, you know, you've got to change, because there's this ginormous population of us who are going to be reaching retirement, the stereotypical retirement age or perceived retirement age in the next decade, and we're not going to want to go.
Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies. Listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers. And finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 124 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for a discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. Career Pivot brings this podcast to you. CareerPivot.com is one of the very few websites dedicated to those of us in the second half of life and our careers. Take a moment to check out the blog and the other resources that are delivered to you free of charge. If you are enjoying this podcast, please share it with other like-minded souls. Subscribe on CareerPivot.com, iTunes, or any of the other apps that supply podcasts. Share it on social media, or just tell your neighbors and colleagues. The more people we can reach, the more people we can help. Next week will be episode 125. Wow! This podcast has been around for 2.5 years and continues to grow. We should surpass 8,000 downloads this month, the month of April. With so many episodes, I have been asked to categorize the episodes to make it easier to find specific episodes. That is what I've done. If you will go to careerpivot.com/podcast and scroll down past the podcast player, you will find a section called Show Notes by Category. The categories are Career Pivot Interviews. These are people who have made career pivots in the second half of life, interviews with career experts, Repurpose Your Career audiobook. Those are the chapters from the last edition. And I started recording this edition. Actually, I've done two chapters so far. There is the Repurpose Your Career series, where I've done three different people, taking them through my career pivot evaluation, becoming an expat, question and answer, and then everything else, other topics. Let me know what you think. The show notes are categorized, so you should be able to find what you're looking for. Feel free to email me at podcast@careerpivot.com with any comments. Next week, I will be interviewing Paul Tasner. I found Paul through his TED Talk, where he told his story of being laid off at the age of 64 and becoming an entrepreneur. He formed Pulpworks, where he makes environmental friendly packaging and is doing his part to save the world from plastics. This week, I'm interviewing Patty Temple Rocks, author of I'm Not Done, a great book on ageism. Let me read you her bio. Over the course of an impressive 4-decade career, Patty Temple Rocks has held senior leadership positions in 3 different sectors of the communications industry, PR, advertising, and on the corporate client side. She is an inspirational leader, innovative thinker, problem solver, growth driver, brand steward, and agent of change. Patty is passionate about fighting age discrimination and helping people understand how it harms individuals, businesses, and society as a whole. To learn more about this issue and get in touch with Patty, visit her website, imnotdone.rocks. Cool website name. Before we get to this interview, I want to apologize for some of the audio. When I recorded the episode, I did not realize Skype did not switch microphones. I recorded my side over my MacBook's internal mic. Second, Skype was being Skype early in the episode, and there are some minor gaps. Lastly, Patty's dog was playing with a toy in the background at times. All are minor, but this is the world I live in. I recorded this episode using Skype, Piazza, which is a piece of software that runs on the Mac, and a MacBook Air computer, in my closet from Ajijic, Mexico. Patty was in Chicago. I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast. I have Patty Temple Rocks. What a name. I love your name.
It's a sentence, I always say.
Okay. So, Patty, I read your bio to the audience. Do you want to add anything to that?
Well, it's pretty exhaustive, I would say, except it doesn't say a whole lot about my personal self, which is that I have a passion for traveling and collecting experiences along the way of local cultures. And that's probably one of my all-time favorite ways to spend my time.
Thank you, Patty. And what was the impetus to write this book on ageism?
Well, it was a collection of experiences that were 10 years apart. But I would say the first one, which was something that I wrote about in my book, was when I watched my boss, mentor, and someone who I had known for a very long time and had become a very close friend on top of all these other relationships, seemingly to me, suddenly and inexplicably, sort of moved to the sideline in her career. And by the way, she was the first woman in a very large company, multinational company, to have reached the C-suite, the executive level of that company. So she'd had a marvelously successful career and obviously done a whole lot of things right. So it just didn't sit right with me. I felt like something wasn't quite right. And I, at a cocktail party, had the opportunity to be chatting with our CEO, who was her boss, and knew that he was a big fan of hers. And so I just asked him, what's going on? And more importantly, how can I help? And his response was twofold. And the first part just didn't sit right with me. It was that, well, don't you see this might be good for you? And of course, that has never been what motivates me. But number two, he said, and you know, I think she's just tired. She's been doing this a long time. So I think maybe she's just tired. And all I knew at the time, I didn't really understand yet because I hadn't started thinking about it or researching about it or talking to people about it. But, you know, I didn't realize that age, she's just old or might be tired, is another way of saying she's just old. And so, but what I knew for sure was that never before or since has anybody described my friend and mentor as tired. So I just knew it wasn't true. So it just didn't sit right with me. And I think what that really did for me more than anything else was get my antenna up. And I literally just started being a more keen observer of what was happening to people when they reached a certain age in their career. And frankly, I didn't like what I saw. So my reaction, I am sort of embarrassed as I think back on it now, was very self-focused. And it was, how will I make sure that this doesn't happen to me? And how can I prepare for this day that's inevitable and be ready to go do something else when the workplace decides that it's time for me to do that? And, you know, I read the literature I could find at the time, and there were lots of things written about how to sort of create a second career, how to go do something else when you were no longer perceived as valuable in the first part of what you'd done. And I realized, like when I sort of came to my own reckoning, I thought, I'm not ready to go do something else at all. I'm very good at what I do. I've built an entire career doing this. I have a lot to offer. I have a lot left to give. And I don't really, I might someday want to go do something else, but that time for me isn't now. And I just realized that if I felt that way, chances were there were a whole lot of people that felt that way. So my focus in my book is a little bit different than all the books that I'd read, because my message is really targeted more towards business, to say, you know, you've got to change, because there's this ginormous population of us who are going to be reaching retirement, the stereotypical retirement age or perceived retirement age in the next decade, and we're not going to want to go. And so that was kind of the impetus for me to write the book and why I did. I decided to call it I'm Not Done, because I don't feel like I'm done. But more importantly, I want to sort of, you know, raise awareness and get people talking about it, because I know there are hundreds of thousands of people like me who are also not done.
Yeah, I've noticed there are all kinds of code words around ageism. One of them, my favorite, that happened actually to me was when a hiring manager said, well, this guy, he just doesn't have the energy.
Right.
And that was, right. Tired.
Another
doesn't
code
have the,
word, yep.
Right.
For digital native, basically means you were born at a time when social media was, you know, second nature to you. I mean, there's lots of ways that people say it without really saying it.
And again, I'll refer back to Chris Farrell's book, Unretirement, where he talked about the fact that at some point companies are going to need us. But without companies changing their behaviors and their HR policies, we're still going to have ageism.
Right.
Right. And so that's why I was interested in having you on here, because it's, we need to change, as I had Ashton Applewhite on about changing our own behaviors, but companies need to change.
And that was kind of where I felt there was room for my message, because I wasn't reading enough about that. And I also just decided that, in my opinion, it was a little bit of a bad choice made out of ignorance more than deliberateness. And that I do think that there were a lot of people willing to just, you know, make some assumptions without having conversations about what really is in the best interest of both the company and the employee. And for all sorts of reasons, you know, age, talking about age is considered a taboo. So we're not, you know, you're raised to think, okay, never ask someone how old they are. That's rude. In life in general and in business, we're told, you know, you never should ask somebody how much money they make. And I couldn't help but, as I thought about those sort of social norms, thinking about how the fact that we were raised, my generation was definitely raised that talking about salary was verboten. But I'm wondering if the pay inequity that we've seen between the genders might have been uncovered a whole lot sooner if we were willing to be a little bit more transparent about salaries. And again, that's not to say that everybody should be paid the same. But when it's all a big secret, it's kind of hard to know if the inequities are there. And I feel the same way about age. If we don't understand how people are really feeling and you know, of course, add that to how they're performing, we're going to just make some assumptions that when people hit a certain age, they don't want to travel anymore, or they would never move, or I don't want to waste my money on training them. And they're just all these, you know, untruths that get perpetuated due to lack of conversation.
So what do you think is the root cause of the problem of ageism at companies?
Well, I'll at the risk of repeating myself, but I want to, because it's probably, I think, my single most important message. It's that we haven't talked about it. And, you know, if you think about some of the other isms that have been part of our work professional lives, those of us, I'm 59, you know, so particularly those of us in our late 50s. I mean, I remember a time when there was not a diversity and inclusion officer. There was not a diversity and inclusion strategy. It was not something that we were trained on. And in my career, those things started to happen. And so today, I think, while I would never say we've addressed racism or sexism for that matter, we at least are talking about it, and it's become part of the corporate narrative and the societal narrative. And if there was a sense that somebody in the workplace was treated unfairly, or even worse, you know, sort of fired, that was gender or race based, I think there are a lot of people in the company and society at large that would be up in arms and say, we can't let that happen. That doesn't happen with age. When somebody is mistreated or let go and they're in their late 50s or 60, you know, whatever the age, it is a very safe conclusion to come to, well, they must have wanted to go. You know, they are going to go do whatever they're going to do next. And so people don't even question whether or not it was a choiceful move on the part of the person, which I think is part of what we need to start doing, is just really noticing when, you know, and I hate using the term older workers because I don't think it's older, but it, you know, if you think of workers in their people who are in their 50s and 60s who hold jobs are the ones that are typically being ushered out of organizations. And if when that happens from now on, if we can start to get people to at least ask the question, what's going on in my organization, I think we can start to make change.
Yeah. And until we start, as you say, talk about it, but also identify it in real time, just like I had somebody at my last tech startup I wanted to hire, and my boss said, well, he just doesn't have the energy I'm looking for. And I didn't spot that as a code word for ageism.
No, it took me a long time to recognize some of that as well.
In hindsight, I would have called him out on it.
Sure. And, you know, we're sometimes those of us who are in that, you know, that group are our own worst enemies. I mean, I'll give you two very personal examples because they're both about me. But one of them was when I turned 55, I had always kind of wanted to get a tattoo. And I thought that would be a fun way to, you know, celebrate my 55th birthday if I could think of the right thing. And I did. And it's a very small, little, subtle tattoo. But I went back to my office, and I worked in, you know, an agency environment, which is very, very young. And I'm showing some of the young creatives that I work with, look what I did for my big birthday. And by the end of that day, I did it in my lunch hour. By the end of that day, as people were coming down to see it, I was getting birthday wishes. And a few people said, I didn't know you were 50. Congratulations. And recognizing that I work in a very youth-dominated industry, and it is not one that typically has had great opportunities for people who are older, I kept my mouth shut because I thought, if they all think I'm 50, that's good, and I'm just going to go with this narrative. And in hindsight, I realized what a mistake I made because, you know, in my opinion, like the 20-somethings and the 30-somethings are usually not the ones practicing age discrimination. They actually revere and want to sort of soak up our wisdom. And so I think those 25-year-olds would have looked differently, thought differently about what 55 looked like if I'd been honest. So I really regret, you know, that I didn't do that. And my second experience was when I left that job because I felt marginalized. People felt bad. I had a really good career there, and they didn't really necessarily want me to leave. But on the other hand, there wasn't, you know, the meaningful job that I wanted. And they really wanted to give me kind of like a retirement party. And I just said, I think I'd learned from my tattoo incident. I said, no, you know, I thank you anyway. It's a lovely gesture, but I am not retiring. It might have looked to the outside world like I was, but I wanted to be very clear and honest with the fact that this was not what I was doing because I was going on to some happy little retirement party.
How we view retirement is probably very different than other people think we view retirement.
Sure.
Right? I don't want to retire.
There have been many studies that show that when you ask somebody in their 20s or 30s when they're going to retire, you know, they're going to say 55, you know, 50, some even view it as a badge of honor to be able to retire early. But the older that we get, the more we push that age up for all sorts of reasons.
Well, it's interesting. I have Andrew Scott booked on this podcast for later, probably in May. And Andrew and his wife wrote the book, The 100-Year Life. And the fact that the 20-somethings are probably, they're not going to retire until they're 85.
Right.
They just haven't figured that out yet.
Well, and for all sorts of reasons, we're healthier, lots of good reasons, and that we're healthy and vital and have lots to contribute. But many can't afford to retire. So if you're looking at retiring, you know, 20 years ago, if you retired when you were 60, there was a very high likelihood that your retirement would need to last you 20 years. Today, if you retire when you're 60, for the most part, you're going to need to work another, or not work, but you're going to need to have enough money to last you another 30 years. So there's all sorts of reasons, I think, why.
I commonly tell the story of there was a very famous entrepreneur now named Del Webb.
Sure.
And he opened the first Sun City on January 1, 1960. He had 5 model homes and a strip mall. And he opened it up to 10,000 cars on the first day. Of those cars driving in, what percentage do you think smoked?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Right? A lot.
Yeah, right.
So they were probably all in their 60s and probably weren't going to live more than 10 years.
Right.
Today, if you're a married couple and 65, there's a really, really good chance one of you will live to 100. And so, yes, we're going to live a lot longer. And by the way, the 25-year-olds, there's a good shot they're going to live to 120.
I had a first experience for me. I was buying a birthday card for a family member who was turning 80. And I thought, you know, I wonder if they have 80 cards, you know, how they have 21 and 4. And they not only had an 80 card, they had a 90 card and a 100 card. And I thought, if that isn't a sign of the change and yes, a sign of the times, I don't know what is.
Can you give my listeners some examples of companies that have addressed the issue of ageism?
Sure. I hope we'll have more, you know, as time goes by. But one that I wrote about in my book that is one of my favorites is Herman Miller, the furniture manufacturing company in Michigan. Chances are you've had a Herman Miller product in your office at some point in your career. But they looked around, and what I love most about their story is that they did it at first because it was good for their business. So they did a census basically of their employee population and realized that if everybody who was retirement eligible chose to take it at the time of their eligibility, they would have a serious labor shortage and a serious knowledge transfer problem, that the company's business would be challenged in a negative way by this occurrence. At the same time, they also realized that many of their folks who were opting to retire were doing so without a lot of notice. So that was just kind of the cultural norm, as it is with most companies, was you don't want to tell somebody too soon that you're retiring because then they're going to, you know, think you're short term, whatever. So they realized that for many of those people, they had some trouble adjusting to retirement. They weren't perhaps prepared financially. They had sort of not worked through or understood the family dynamics. And so it wasn't in the best interest of the employee to do it so abruptly. So they created a program that they call Flex Retirement that basically allows and in fact encourages employees to have conversations with their managers about their retirement as much as 5 years ahead of time before they're thinking about it. And it might look like, you know, I would like to do this somewhere in this time frame, but as a pathway to doing that, I'd like to reduce my hours, or I would be interested if there's an opportunity for me to work on XYZ project or something like that, then the company was not obligated, of course, to do it unless it made sense for the company. But they found that there almost always was a solution that was in the best interest both of the company and the employee. And one of the major things that it benefited Herman Miller for was they were able to plan for much more orderly successions. And a best practice in succession planning is always to have the person whose job is being filled make some contributions to the discussions about how, which of course makes perfect sense, but it rarely happens. So they introduced that program and they found that it was just a win-win all the way around. It had total support of their senior management. It took the stigma off retiring. It allowed the company to plan better. And so, as I said, it was just a win-win for everybody.
What do you think the solution is? And is there a solution?
Well, I'm an optimist, so I really think there is. And I think you alluded to, anytime there's a problem that needs to be solved, we tend to be a little bit more aggressive and faster when it comes to solving it. You know, it's when you think it might be out there someday, sometimes it takes a little bit more gumption, I guess. But now I think you're right in that many companies, just like as Herman Miller did, are going to realize that it's in their best interest from a labor standpoint to find ways to keep their employees around longer. So I think that that will create some of the change. I also think that if we can just get people talking about it and not treating ageism like it's, you know, on a list of taboo subjects, I think solutions will arise from that conversation. One of the things that I think will surprise the readers of my book, those who are on the, you know, management side or HR side, is that, you know, I interviewed a whole lot of people who had experienced this for themselves. And with it goes, you know, it's an obvious conclusion that sometimes older workers are not around because of the money. You know, companies are looking for ways to cut costs. Younger workers tend to have lower salaries. I mean, that is true. And so, you know, I've always believed that it's up to all of us to continue to prove our value, no matter what our age or what, you know, so that we earn our salary. And I think that is completely true when it comes to older workers. But there are sometimes business conditions that require cost cutting, that requires personnel decisions. So to a person, all of these people who had felt as though their job was, you know, eliminated or marginalized to such a degree that they opted to leave, said that had their boss come to them and said, honestly and openly, you know, we need to think about some ways to save some costs from a salary standpoint. We really value you. We would like you to stay, but we'd like you to maybe stay in a different capacity. And it might be reduced hours. It might be a different type of job, but we just can't afford, you know, to pay you at the level that we were. Would you be open to that? Now that feels, as I say the words, you know, I realize that to a boss, that would probably be a really hard conversation to have, and it would feel difficult. And most of it would feel difficult because it never happens. But what I would say is the encouraging side of that conversation is 100% of the people that I talked to said, had that been presented to them as an option, they would have for sure considered it and more than likely taken it. Because again, going back to what we were saying before, most people aren't in a position to completely retire anymore in their 50s or early 60s, if for no other reason than the high cost of health insurance. So for many people, a situation that would have allowed them to keep their insurance intact, continue to provide value to the company, but again, maybe do so. Nobody should take a pay cut for doing the exact same job, but most companies can find a creative way to reorganize someone's job so that it takes advantage of their strengths, but it maybe would be something that would come at a lower salary. And as I said, 100% of the people that I interviewed said that that was an option that they would have considered.
There is no question that, number one, health insurance is a huge issue, which is why I'm living in Mexico right now. Two, in all of my career changes, which there have been many, most of them, no one said, well, could you stay and take less money and, you know, do something different? I picked up and left.
Right.
Because I didn't want to do it anymore. And in my online community, one of the common themes is everybody wants freedom. They want freedom to work when they want to work, on what they want to work, and how hard they want to work. And for many of us, it's about the freedom and not about necessarily the pay anymore.
That's exactly right. And that, you know, I have two reactions to what you just said. But the first one is about that freedom. Another word for that is flexibility. And, you know, I know myself working in a business that is very millennial dominated, and we've spent a lot of time, you know, trying to understand the needs of millennials. If you really look at what they want, it's not that dissimilar from what most people want, and definitely people who are at the later years of their career. And that is that flexibility and freedom. You know, it might be for different reasons, but it is a very important benefit to offer people, and it doesn't necessarily have to cost a lot. So it would be very easy for businesses to keep some of these knowledge workers around if they would just offer them a lot of freedom and flexibility. It was interesting. CVS, you know, the drugstore chain, had a program that I thought was brilliant, which is, you know, they have a lot of snowbirds that go to Florida in the winter. And so they were opening up faster than normal in the southern states and needing to train workers and bring them up to speed quickly. They also needed sort of temporary workers because it's not so busy in the summer. And so they realized that if they offered a package to some of their pharmacists and store managers and people like that, where they could choose the option to spend time in Florida, they were going to solve their training problem and their staffing problem, but also provide their older workers with something that was important to them, which was the flexibility to spend winters in a warmer climate. So I think flexibility is a huge weapon in the arsenal, so to speak, for trying to keep older workers happy and engaged.
Well, it's interesting. I talk about this in my multi-generational workshop. The millennials, which are our kids, largely are doing what we wish we had done. Mm-hmm. And they are asking for the freedom and the flexibility. And we're just now getting there where we're willing to start asking for it. We have a lot more in common with millennials than we think.
Absolutely.
So is there anything else you'd like to tell my listeners that you haven't already told them?
Well, the other thing that you said, Mark, that I think is interesting about, you know, the freedom and the flexibility. There are, like, one of the first people I met after my book came out was about my age. And he, you know, we were chatting about it, and he goes, "Well, I am done. I am so done." And I laughed. And I said, "Well, this is not about that everybody should just work until they, you know, they're 80 or, you know, this is not a prescriptive thing. And my, you know, my goal is that if for the people that want to retire when they're 40 or whatever age you want to retire and go do something different or, you know, become an entrepreneur, there's a lot of older entrepreneurs because they just do want the excitement from starting something new and the freedom that brings with it. The main thing that I, hope would be an outcome and a result of this honest and candid conversation about it is that we will all have more choices about our own end of careers. I think, you know, we spend so much time and energy as we begin our careers and we look for mentors and we, you know, read the books and we do all these things. And even our employers spend more time with us at the beginning of our career and we're identifying high potentials. And we, you know, we just do all these things to make sure that our career develops the way that we want it to, but that suddenly starts to stop for many people. And I've always wanted to do this research. I didn't get a chance to do it before my book. But I think if you look at the how many people of the people that don't get the performance reviews when they're supposed to, I think the vast majority of them are over 40. It sort of is decided for us that we care less about career development. And so that's really what I would, you know, and I know a lot of your listeners are in my age group. And I think it's just, you know, partly what I'm trying to fight for a little bit is let's just take control of the end of our careers, not just the beginning of our careers, and We want to be the ones that say, as long as we're doing our job well, we should be the ones that get to say when we're done.
My claim is I don't ever want to retire. I want to work less at something I love on my terms.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, that's great.
It's a
great goal.
Right? It's a great goal. Patty, if someone wanted to reach out and touch you, and more importantly, get a copy of your book, how might they do that?
Sure. Well, thank you. The book is available on Amazon. And again, it's called I'm Not Done. And I do have a website that is imnotdone.rocks. So it should be easy to remember, given my last name, imnotdone.rocks. And that is a great way to reach out to me. And that website is connected to another one I have, pattytemple.rocks, which also has some other writings and things like that I've done. But for now, my focus for all of my writing will be on just trying to continue to raise awareness for this topic. I don't go anywhere and talk about it where I don't hear from somebody that is basically saying, thanks for bringing this up. Thanks for talking about it. So not only am I not done working, I'm not done talking about it.
Well, Patty, thank you for being on the Repurpose Your Career podcast.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. Ageism is not going away anytime soon. Patty is fighting a good fight from the corporate side. Pick up your book and let me know what you think. The Career Pivot community website has become a valuable resource for 50 members who are participating in the beta phase of this project. I am recruiting new members for the next cohort. If you are interested in learning more about the endeavor and would like to be put on the waiting list, please go to careerpivot.com/community. When you sign up, you'll receive more information about the community as it evolves. It is those who are in these initial cohorts get to set the direction of this endeavor. This is a paid membership community where I will be offering group coaching, special content, mastermind groups, branding sessions, Slack channels, and more importantly, it will be a community where you can seek help. Please go to careerpivot.com/community to sign up to learn more. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/in/MR Miller or Mr. Miller. Just include in the connection request you listen to this podcast. Look for Career Pivot on Facebook and LinkedIn. You'll also find me on Twitter at Career Pivot. Please come back next week when I interview Paul Tasner, owner for Pulpworks. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode-124. Please hop over to careerpivot.com. Subscribe to get updates on this podcast and all the other happenings. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podbeam, Overcast, or Spotify. I hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career podcast.